So this week we had two types or two tranches of readings. On the one hand, we had a couple readings that discuss what can be considered truth, transparency, and trust. Specifically, these are the late or the later glasnost campaigns within Russia. So it was lifting a veil of deception, if you will. And on the other hand, you have a focus on subversion, sabotage, and subterfuge, or deception. And so in the latter readings, we had both the reading on the Mongol conquest, and we also, if you think back to last week, we had that reading from the Tao of Deception on one way of analyzing the Chinese strategies that they may consider for warfare. So with the Mongols, and I quote here from the Saunders reading, the Mongols always displayed a shrewd cunning in exploiting the feuds and quarrels of their enemies, which allowed for much easier success. In some cases, success, or if you will, winning victory perhaps before the Mongols even arrived. And then from the Sawyer reading on the Tao of Deception, this comes from last week, which this reading will become much more relevant in lesson six. It discusses the book Unrestricted Warfare, as it says, which falls squarely into the Chinese tradition of total warfare. Based upon their tradition, excuse me, based upon their determination that traditional forms of warfare have become outmoded and the battlefield no longer artificially confined, the authors conclude that the conventional restraints should be ignored and every possible means systemically employed to wrest victory, with effectiveness being the only criteria for judging appropriateness. And so one way that I can underline what I feel are some of the most important themes from the readings and some of the most important themes that we will be discussing in seminar is through a couple case studies. In this case, these are case studies from World War I, which I believe have some relevance today in great power competition. And so the two foci is are going to be, on the one hand, what is called in Hungarian salami taktikia, or salami tactics. And on the other hand, we're going to talk about deception or a lack of deception. So salami tactics are basically trying to get an enemy to fight within itself or attempting to get an enemy to fight with other adversaries, to overextend the enemy, to cause a sort of a complete collapse or partial collapse for follow-on operations. So in 1917, the Kaiser of Germany in World War I was fighting on two fronts. They were fighting on the east, they were fighting on the Russians on the east, and they were also fighting on the west. And what they wanted to do is they wanted Russia to pull out of the war, or they at least wanted to lessen the threat of the Russian army so they could focus all of their efforts in this last year of the war on the west. They would focus all of their efforts at this point in time on Great Britain, France, and her allies. So the Kaiser in 1917 allowed Vladimir Lenin and exiled Bolsheviks to travel by train through Germany to Petrograd and secretly funded some of their subsequent propaganda and helped with their rise to power. The idea that the Kaiser had at the time was to create enough division inside Russia, enough infighting, that they would overextend the Tsar, that is the Tsar of Russia's resources and focus, and perhaps lessen their threat on the Eastern Front. Or to build enough civil strife and perhaps even civil war so that the Tsar would have to pull his army completely out of World War I to focus on internal security. Or to create divisions and doubt over the workers' and the soldiers' rights in the Tsar army to lessen their will to fight, to promote infighting, and to promote desertion. Or with a best case scenario, which is actually what happened, maybe unlikely, but a most favorable course of action would be that Lenin actually does win power. Lenin has very few Bolsheviks with his seemingly extreme views. And it does overcome all the other schisms, all the other types of socialists, all the other types of nationalists. And then in return, when Lenin comes to power, he would, in return for Germany's support for Lenin would pull the Russian army out of the war altogether, and Germany would be able to focus on the Western Front. However, Germany failed to believe Lenin's international agenda, which was published, or to assess his political acumen and his drive. Subsequently, after Lenin came to power and Lenin was rising to power, he set off what many have described as very clumsily, I think, a ideological bioweapon that spread well beyond the borders of Russia and actually bolstered many German communists and socialists, and one of the many excuses that the Nazi used to gain power. So this is one of those cases when country A wants to create divisions in country B, and so they let loose a certain faction, a certain network, a certain consonant network in this case. And then it comes back to bite them. Because in this case, what they let loose into country B ends up being something that changes the ideological landscape, not only in country B, but also in country A and in other places. And so one of the questions that I'd like us to ask ourselves, either while you're doing the reading or in seminar, is if Germany had correctly predicted Lenin's success and transnational aspirations, what could Germany have done differently to try to dampen the second order effects, if anything at all? And so some of the things that we have to think through, and I'm oversimplifying these case studies, these more recent case studies I'm about to talk about for learning purposes, because of course there are very lots of ins and outs. These are very complicated case studies with many different perspectives from historians. But one case study is the U.S. Special Forces training and supporting the Special Forces or the SWAT teams of Mexico City, and ended up training what became Los Zetas, who eventually became the most violent non-state actor in the world outside of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. We can look to World War II allies training and supporting some members of the Viet Minh, not all of them, but some of them. Japanese trained others. And subsequently, those Viet Minh survived conflicts with France, the United States, and China. So once again, in this case, we were partially training people that eventually would become ideological and military leaders of an enemy of the United States. Then we can also look, and very, very popular to talk about, but again, it's very complex, which is the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, US, Egyptian, and Israel help funding the Mujahideen against the Soviets. And some of these Mujahideen eventually would later train, or even in a few cases, comprise some Taliban and some destabilizing militias in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. Of course, some of those who were trained actually became forces for stability as well. It wasn't a one-to-one ratio, if you will. So this second case study of attempted salami tactics is also occurred in the same year, 1917. It also occurred during World War I. And in this case, it wasn't salami tactics as in Germany wanting, for example, Russia to conduct infighting. It was Germany wanting the United States to face other enemies, so other states, in order to keep them overextended and to keep their focus not on Germany. They wanted the United States not to enter World War I. And so what occurred in 1917 was that Germany declared absolute submarine warfare against the USA. At the time, the United States was providing provisions, support, perhaps even armaments to the United Kingdom and her allies. But they wanted to busy the United States so as not to enter the fight in Europe itself. First, Germany considered an approach not unlike their approach in Russia, and they wanted to sow dissent amongst German American and Irish American populations internally to create some civil strife, if you will. But they realized they weren't going to have great effect, and there's many reasons for that. So the first idea, or the first possible strategy, was to create societal divisions and dissent within the United States to keep the United States Army focused internally. But once they realized they weren't going to have great effect, then they wanted to try to get other countries to provide a security threat or to be a security threat to the United States. And they sent a telegram known as the Zimmerman Telegram in 1917. This is right before Wilson was re-inaugurated. So they sent the telegram from Berlin to their embassy in Washington, D.C. And the Zimmerman Telegram was then to be sent from the embassy in Washington, D.C. to the German embassy in Mexico City. In Mexico, according to the telegram, the ambassador there in Mexico was to secretly meet with the Mexican president to build an alliance. Germany was to back the Mexicans in their attempt to retake or attempt to retake Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. The idea wasn't necessarily that the Mexicans would be successful, but it was to keep the United States focused not in Europe, but focused on other enemies. And then after meeting with the Mexican president, they were both, that is the Mexicans and the Germans, were going to attempt to implore the Japanese to wage naval interference along or near the California coast and the Panama Canal. The idea was to keep the U.S. busy with other adversaries, to be overextended, and not to enter the war. So in the first approach, or in the first case study, that is, the Kaiser was trying to have the Russians fight each other and perhaps Lenin to come to power and ultimately to pull the army out of the Eastern Front. And they were wildly successful. Some would argue they were too successful. Of course, it didn't help them in the end to be victorious in World War I, but certainly in the near term, it allowed the Kaiser to focus on the Western Front and take some of his forces from the Eastern Front. And then in the case of the United States, they failed wildly, and it actually backfired. And this is a case study, so this really, it's one case study, but it underlines not only the salami tactics, but it underlines the importance of deception. So what happened with the Zimmerman Telegram? The Germans were aware that if this clandestine influence became known, if the U.S. public knew that Germany was trying to rile up the Mexicans and rile up the Japanese to attack or provide a security threat to the United States, the public opinion may actually force the U.S. president to declare war on Germany. That it might be enough for U.S. citizens to overlook or to take a left turn from Woodrow Wilson's promise to not enter the war and demand that we, in fact, the United States, enters the war on the side of the Allies. So the German government, they sent the telegram, as I said, from Berlin to D.C. with fresh codes, with new codes. The idea was that it was so important they wanted to change their entire code system so that the British wouldn't be able to immediately decipher what was happening. The problem is that even despite the new code, the London codebreakers, these were mostly considered amateurs, today I'd consider them at the time to be professional codebreakers, they intercepted the Zimmerman telegram almost immediately, and they got the gist. They knew something was afoot of trying to get enemies of the United States to become a security threat of the United States. But Germany failed to use this new code system in its relayed message from Washington, D.C. to Mexico City. So the United Kingdom, or Great Britain, they had an idea of what was afoot, And then they were able to intercept the message that was supposed to be sent by telegram from Washington, D.C. to Mexico City, and were able to almost immediately decipher, decode it, because the Germans used the old code from D.C. to Mexico. So they used the new code from Berlin to London, perhaps to buy themselves some time, or perhaps to not allow the British to ever decode or decipher in a best case scenario. But they used the old code, which Great Britain already had, and the Germans suspected they already had, from Washington, D.C. to Mexico City. So this was a failure of deception in that all of the efforts were put into secrecy, and that is to have a code they thought was undecipherable, as opposed to having multiple deception plans, perhaps being part of a multi-pronged telegram, or perhaps aside from sending German agents to each in part with different deception stories, provide directly to Mexico City what the Kaiser wanted to be done. So it wasn't a matter of having to uncover numerous deception stories, or to find that numerous deception stories were incorrect, and then to find a certain level of security. All of the Kaiser's efforts with regards to getting the United States to not enter World War I were put or put into the confidence was put into the strength of a ciphered code. So now let's take a look at what happens when influence is conducted with layered deception stories. Now I'm going to continue talking about the Zimmermann telegram. The British use a clandestine plan with layered deception schemes to allow the United States to know what was in the German telegram. The British wanted the US military in Europe, but needed to avoid the following. They feared that the US public would feel that the British were unduly manipulating the US, the United States government, and United States citizens. So the British knew that they did not want to be the protagonist of this influence campaign. Because previous to this, the British had been trying to get the United States to enter the war, and previous to this, at least politically, the United States, it was unpopular for the United States to consider entering the war on the side of the British. The British felt that if it was known that the British were trying to manipulate the United States, if they were known as one of the sources of information about the Zimmermann telegram, that the US public might become wary. They might become, oh, you know, are they trying to manipulate us? Are they lying about this? Are they making this up? This is, I mean, it was what's in the Zimmermann telegram, even at the time, but especially today, sounds absolutely preposterous. Okay, it sounds very extreme. Of course, Germany had done similar things in Russia, and it actually worked. The US government were thinking that the British were making up a ridiculous telegram, so they didn't want also the US government to believe that they were making all of this up. Because at the time, it was considered the Mexican government and army were considered a threat or security threat, but not necessarily strong enough to reclaim parts of the United States, so they certainly could attempt to do so. They also did not want to reveal, this is the United Kingdom, they did not want to reveal to the world or to the Americans that they had certain code-breaking capabilities. They wanted Germany to continue, at least for a few months, to use the same either old code or this new code that they were starting to understand better and better. So first, you have a level of secrecy, or what I would like to call a level of subtlety, because nothing was formally secret in Washington, D.C. in 1917 with regards to this case study. So they had British junior officers meeting clandestinely and informally in person with some junior White House aides. So, hey, this is what's happening, etc. And again, if things went sour, if people in the White House did not want to believe the telegram, or if they did not want to, or they wanted to believe that the British were unduly influencing them, there was a level of deniability. which is, hey, our junior officers were talking way out of school. They have no idea what they're talking about, or you shouldn't listen to your own junior officers or junior staff. They have no idea what they're talking about. And then there was three layers of deception stories. So the first deception story was from the UK to the US government. The United Kingdom stated that they understood what was in the telegram, not because of any code breaking, but because they intercepted the telegram directly via the Western Union. And the Brits uncovered the telegram, so through maybe not necessarily completely legal means, but certainly they weren't code breakers. So it was intercepted via Western Union. The second deception story was from the US government to US journalists. The US government, this is the White House, uncovered that the telegram was indeed captured through the Western Union, but by the United States, not by Great Britain. They wanted to look strong. They didn't want to look like foreign powers were meddling in their affairs in the United States, that they were on top of things that the US government had, in fact, unveiled and found out the telegram and what was in the telegram calling the Mexicans and Japanese to attack or become security threats to the United States. The third deception story was from US journalists to the US public. And that is, they had newspapers verify the telegram's authenticity through the Department of State. And so a deception plan was that any journalist that wanted to write about this, and it was written about in a regional newspaper at first, and then it went national very quickly, is if they wanted to verify that this, in fact, all did happen, there were lines set up and an individual set up in the Department of State to verify, yes, all of this did happen. So it was a verified deception story. So you had a level of secrecy, and then you had three levels of deception. And in fact, this was enough, or this was ultimately the straw that broke the camel's back. And this ultimately, the Zimmer Telegram was enough. And there were other events in the previous years, but this was the point in time. This was the when of the United States getting involved in World War I. And this was the president believing that he had just enough public support to actually send the army and the Marines into Europe. And this plays up, I think, with regards to deception. It's sort of an adage, if you will, and I think it's best explained by Doc H. Vaughan, who was a Swiss writer, and he wrote a book called Total Resistance in 1957. And as Doc writes, secrecy is imperative. It is almost impossible to maintain, but often can be better achieved through the use of misleading rumors than through tight security. To provide the enemy with several stories, all of which require interpretation and decision, will often provide the time needed to carry out an operation. So this is something the British seem to understand in trying to influence the United States to enter World War I, and this seemed to be something that the Kaiser and Germany did fail to understand during World War I, to trying to get the United States to not enter the war on the side of the Allies. So again, they're just really two case studies, the Zimmermann Telegram and the case study of the German support or help with Lenin's rise to power and return to Russia and then subsequent rise to power. And this is to underline, again, the importance of us studying and understanding deception and the importance of us understanding salami tactics. Okay. On the other hand, okay, we're going to talk about the sort of lack of deception or what is called late glasnost campaigns of the Soviet Union and Russia, on how that may have been one of the contributing factors that led to the dissolvement or dissolution of the Soviet Union. Thank you very much.